Chapter 4. FXWL, MXWL, ACXW, ASXW, ADXLL, APXLL, APXXRXLDGXXDFXRXFINTXXXI, LXG, DXG, HXG, XRFRXG, XMEZXFACXNCXRDBXG, CXXL, NXWCXXL, DXBCXXL, XUFXXL, XDXFXRXWING, XLDCXCK, DXN apostrophe TFRXWNSXDXN apostrophe T, DXN apostrophe THXLLX, NXRHXWL, NXRGRXWL, NXRBXWWXWWXW, GXXDLXRD, JXHN, HXWXUDXLXXK, TXLDXUSX, XUKNXW, but STXP Erxling XRXCXFN XLDPXLLABXIDSX, and GX and DRXWN XRSXRRXWSNABXWL. Apostrophe apostrophe, the uproar occasioned by this mystical and cabalistical article is not to be conceived. The first definite idea entertained by the populace was that some diabolical treason lay concealed in the hieroglyphics, and there was a general rush to Bullethead's residence for the purpose of riding him on a rail, but that gentleman was nowhere to be found. He had vanished, no one could tell how, and not even the ghost of him has ever been seen since. Unable to discover its legitimate object, the popular fury at length subsided, leaving behind it, by way of sediment, quite a medley of opinion about this unhappy affair. One gentleman thought the whole antennae joke. Another said that, indeed, Bullethead had shown much tenuberance of fancy. A third admitted him tenuric, but no more. A fourth could only suppose that the Yankees designed to press, in a general way, his aspiration. Say, rather, to set anten. Ample to posterity, apostrophe suggested a fifth. That Bullethead had been driven to an extremity was clear to all, and in fact, since that editor could not be found, there was some talk about lynching the other one. The more common conclusion, however, was that the affair was, simply, extraordinary and inexplicable. Even the town mathematician confessed that he could make nothing of so dark a problem. X, every body knew, was an unknown quantity, but in this case, as he properly observed, there was an unknown quantity of X. The opinion of Bob, the devil who kept dark about his having X at the paragraph, did not meet with so much attention as I think it deserved, although it was very openly and very fearlessly expressed. He said that, for his part, he had no doubt about the matter at all, that it was a clear case that Mr. Bullethead never could be persuaded fur to drink like other folks, but was continually a swigging o' that ear blessed 30 ale, and as a natural consequence, it just puffed him up savage and made him cross in the dream. Apostrophe, tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 equals 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 Metzengerstein, pestis arum vivus moriens 2 amor 0. Martin Luther, horror and fatality have been stalking abroad in all ages. Why then give a date to this story I have to tell? Let it suffice to say, that at the period of which I speak, there existed, in the interior of Hungary, a settled although hidden belief in the doctrines of the metempsychosis. Of the doctrines themselves, that is, of their falsity, or of their probability, I say nothing. I assert, however, that much of our incredulity, as Le Breyer says, of all our unhappiness, vient de ne pouvoir tres souls, *1. But there are some points in the Hungarian superstition which were fast verging to absurdity. The Hungarians differed very essentially from their Eastern authorities. For example, the soul, said the former, I give the words of an acute and intelligent Parisian, ne demure qu'un soul foi stands encore sensible. Arist unchival, unchin, unhamim, neske la resemblance pu tangible de ses animox. The families of Berlifitzing and Metzengerstein had been at variance for centuries. Never before were two houses so illustrious, mutually embittered by hostility so deadly. The origin of this enmity seems to be found in the words of an ancient prophecy: lofty name shall have a fearful fall when, as the rider over his horse, the mortality of Metzengerstein shall triumph over the immortality of Berlifitzing. To be sure, the words themselves had little or no meaning. But more trivial causes have given rise, and that no long while ago, to consequences equally eventful. Besides, the estates, which were contiguous, had long exercised a rival influence in the affairs of a busy government. Moreover, near neighbors are seldom friends, and the inhabitants of the castle Berlifitzing might look, from their lofty buttresses, into the very windows of the palace Metzengerstein. Least of all at the more than feudal magnificence, thus discovered, a tendency to allay the irritable feelings of the less ancient and less wealthy Berlifitzings. What wonder then, that the words, however silly, of that prediction, should have succeeded in setting and keeping at variance two families already predisposed to quarrel by every instigation of hereditary jealousy. The prophecy seemed to imply, if it implied anything, a final triumph on the part of the already more powerful house, and was of course remembered with the more bitter animosity by the weaker and less influential. Wilhelm, Count Berlifitzing, although loftily descended, was, at the epoch of this narrative, an infirm and doting old man, remarkable for nothing but an inordinate and inveterate personal antipathy to the family of his rival, and so passionate a love of horses and of hunting, that neither bodily infirmity, great age, nor mental incapacity prevented his daily participation in the dangers of the chase. Frederick, Baron Metzengerstein, was, on the other hand, not yet married, followed him quickly after. Frederick was, at that time, in his 15th year. In a city, 15 years are no long period. A child may be still a child in his third lustrum. But in a wilderness, in so magnificent a wilderness as that old principality, 15 years have a far deeper meaning. From some peculiar circumstances attending the administration of his father, the young baron, at the decease of the former, entered immediately upon his vast possessions. Such estates were seldom held before by a nobleman of Hungary. His castles were without number. The chief in point of splendor and extent was the Hatto Metzengerstein. The boundary line of his dominions was never clearly defined, but his principal park embraced a circuit of 50 miles. Upon the succession of a proprietor so young, with a character so well known, to a fortune so unparalleled, little speculation was afloat in regard to his probable course of conduct. And, indeed, for the space of 3 days, the behavior of the out-heroded Herod unfairly surpassed the expectations of his most enthusiastic admirers. Shameful debaucheries, flagrant treacheries, unheard of atrocities gave his trembling vassals quickly to understand that no servile submission on their part, no punctilios of conscience on his own, were thenceforward to prove any security against the remorseless fangs of a petty Caligula. On the night of the fourth day, the stables of the castle Berlifitzing were discovered to be on fire, and the unanimous opinion of the neighborhood added the crime of the incendiary to the already hideous list of the baron's misdemeanors and enormities. But during the tumult occasioned by this occurrence, the young nobleman himself sat apparently buried in meditation, in a vast and desolate upper apartment of the family palace of Metzengerstein. The rich although faded tapestry hangings which swung gloomily upon the walls represented the shadowy and majestic forms of a thousand illustrious ancestors. Here, rich ermined priests and pontifical dignitaries, familiarly seated with the autocrat and the sovereign, put a veto on the wishes of a temporal king, or restrained with the fiat of papal supremacy the rebellious scepter of the archenemy. There, the dark, tall statures of the prince's messengers seen their muscular war coursers plunging over the carcasses of fallen foes, startled the steadiest nerves with their vigorous expression. And here, again, the voluptuous and swan-like figures of the dames of days gone by, floated away in the mazes of an unreal dance to the strains of imaginary melody. But as the baron listened, or affected to listen, to the gradually increasing uproar in the stables of Berlifitzing, or perhaps pondered upon some more novel, some more decided act of audacity, his eyes became unwittingly riveted to the figure of an enormous, and unnaturally colored horse, represented in the tapestry as belonging to a Saracen ancestor of the family of his rival. The horse itself, in the foreground of the design, stood motionless and statue-like while farther back, its discomfited rider perished by the dagger of a Metzengerstein. On Frederick's lip arose a fiendish expression, as he became aware of the direction which his glance had, without his consciousness, assumed. Yet he did not remove it. On the contrary, he could by no means account for the overwhelming anxiety which appeared falling like a pall upon his senses. It was with difficulty that he reconciled his dreamy and incoherent feelings with the certainty of being awake. The longer he gazed, the more absorbing became the spell, the more impossible did it appear that he could ever withdraw his glance from the fascination of that tapestry. But the tumult, without becoming suddenly more violent, with a compulsory exertion he diverted his attention to the glare of ruddy light thrown full by the flaming stables upon the windows of the apartment. The action, however, was but momentary. His gaze returned mechanically to the wall. To his extreme horror and astonishment, the head of the gigantic steed had, in the meantime, altered its position. The neck of the animal, before arched, as if in compassion, over the prostrate body of its lord, was now extended, at full length, in the direction of the baron. The eyes, before invisible, now wore an energetic and human expression, while they gleamed with a fiery and unusual red, and the distended lips of the apparently enraged horse left in full view his gigantic and disgusting teeth. Stupefied with terror, the young nobleman tottered to the door. As he threw it open, a flash of red light, streaming far into the chamber, flung his shadow with a clear outline against the quivering tapestry, and he shuddered to perceive that shadow as he staggered a while upon the threshold, assuming the exact position, and precisely filling up the contour, of the relentless, and triumphant murderer of the Saracen Berlifitzing. To lighten the depression of his spirits, the baron hurried into the open air. At the principal gate of the palace he encountered three equerries. With much difficulty, and at the imminent peril of their lives, they were restraining the convulsive plunges of a gigantic and fiery-colored horse. "Whose horse? Where did you get him?" demanded the youth, in a querulous and husky tone of voice, as he became instantly aware that the mysterious steed in the tapestried chamber was the very counterpart of the furious animal before his eyes. "He is your own property, sire," replied one of the equerries. "At least he is claimed by no other owner. We caught him flying, all smoking and foaming with rage, from the burning stables of the castle Berlifitzing. Supposing him to have belonged to the old count's stud of foreign horses, we led him back as an estray. But the grooms there disclaim any title to the creature, which is strange, since he bears evident marks of having made a narrow escape from the flames. He letters W5BR also branded very distinctly on his forehead," interrupted a second equerry. "I supposed them, of course, to be the initials of Wilhelm von Berlifitzing, but all at the castle are positive in denying any knowledge of the horse." "Extremely singular," said the young baron, with a musing air, and apparently unconscious of the meaning of his words. "He is, as you say, a remarkable horse, a prodigious horse, although, as you very justly observe, of a suspicious and untractable character. Let him be mine, however," he added, after a pause, "perhaps a rider like Frederick of Metzengerstein may tame even the devil from the stables of Berlifitzing. You are mistaken, my lord. The horse, as I think we mentioned, is not from the stables of the Count. If such had been the case, we know our duty better than to bring him into the presence of a noble of your family. Rue, observed the Baron, dryly, and at that instant a page of the bedchamber came from the palace with a heightened color and a precipitate step. He whispered into his master's ear an account of the sudden disappearance of a small portion of the tapestry in an apartment which he designated, entering, at the same time, into particulars of a minute and circumstantial character. But from the low tone of voice in which these latter were communicated, nothing escaped to gratify the excited curiosity of the equerries. The young Frederick, during the conference, seemed agitated by a variety of emotions. He soon, however, recovered his composure, and an expression of determined malignancy settled upon his countenance, as he gave peremptory orders that a certain chamber should be immediately locked up, and the key placed in his own possession. "Have you heard of the unhappy death of the old hunter Berlifitzing?" said one of his vassals to the Baron, as, after the departure of the page, the huge steed which that nobleman had adopted as his own, plunged and curveted, with redoubled fury, down the long avenue which extended from the chateau to the stables of Metzengerstein. "Oh," said the Baron, turning abruptly toward the speaker, "dead, say you? 'Tis indeed true, my lord, and, to a noble of your name, will be, I imagine, no unwelcome intelligence." A rapid smile shot over the countenance of the listener. How died he? And his rash exertions, to rescue a favorite portion of his hunting stud, he has himself perished miserably in the flames. Indeed, ejaculated the Baron, as if slowly and deliberately impressed with the truth of some exciting idea. "Indeed," repeated the vassal. "Hawking," said the youth, calmly, and turned quietly into the chateau. From this date a marked alteration took place in the outward demeanor of the dissolute young Baron Frederick von Metzengerstein. Indeed, his behavior disappointed every expectation, and proved little in accordance with the views of many a maneuvering mamma, while his habits and manner, still less than formerly, offered anything congenial with those of the neighboring aristocracy. He was never to be seen beyond the limits of his own domain, and, in this wide and social world, was utterly companionless unless, indeed, that unnatural, impetuous, and fiery-colored horse, which he henceforward continually bestrode, had any mysterious right to the title of his friend. Numerous invitations on the part of the neighborhood for a long time, however, periodically came in. Will the Baron honor our festivals with his presence? Will the Baron join us in a hunting of the boar? Metzengerstein does not hunt. Metzengerstein will not attend, were the haughty and laconic answers. These repeated insults were not to be endured by an imperious nobility. Such invitations became less cordial, less frequent in time, they ceased altogether. The widow of the unfortunate Count Berlifitzing was even heard to express a hope that the Baron might be at home, when he did not wish to be at home, since he disdained the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.